This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. The first international break of the season is over. The World Cup is just over 50 days away. But first, the Sky Bet Championship returns minus another manager. Rob Edwards was Watford's 16th appointment in 10 years. He lasted just 10 games. It's a manager who's finally taking the plunge and moving on, who's up first this week.
Even when I had the moments where I wasn't sure if that's what I should do, I felt like I should do it for them, if that makes sense.
And an old-timer will cast his eye over all the big stories of the week.
I was there at Wembley, standing alongside him on his worst day probably of them 10 years, where they didn't get promoted and they were 1-0 up in the 123rd minute of the game.
It's the official EFL podcast. It's the question that's been on the lips of many of us for some time now. After leading Rotherham United straight back to three immediate promotions following Sky Bet Championship relegations, what would it take to prize manager Paul Warne away from the New York Stadium? Well, we can ask him, as Derby County last week installed him as their new head coach. He brings his backroom staff. Derby's interim coach, Liam Rossignol, departs immediately. And third world problems and all that. Paul, we're talking to you in your new, well, it looks like an interim car, doesn't it? Because obviously the practicalities of moving jobs, you've had to acquire a new vehicle to get about.
Derby have kindly loaned me a car. However, I've had to take my car back to Rotherham, which I loved, that had a big boot for my dog Chief, take him to the woods every day. This boot is, third world problems, insufficient. I can't have him on the back seat because he'll lick my ears and everything while I'm driving. So my wife's job today is to try and find us a car quickly that will put the prince in the boot.
I mean, I guess it's a question you'll have been asked a lot.
Yeah.
The kind of weirdness of the last week, because you're so indelibly linked to that South Yorkshire Football Club. 20 years of your life have gone there. I mean, even putting Derby's training ground in the sat nav to go in a different direction in the morning, I guess, is a whole head shaker for you.
Yeah, it's been really strange. I mean, obviously it happened, went through, I spoke to the chairman at Rotherham, got a good relationship with, spoke to him Wednesday afternoon, went to literally have a cup of tea with him, shake hands with him and say, you know, I think this is a goodbye. And he was fine. Like, okay, I understand. I knew it was always going to happen. And from there, we went away on the Thursday. Well, I went down to Derby first to do all the paperwork with all my staff and then speak to them. And then on the Thursday, went away, came back late Sunday night. And then Monday morning, after about 3 hours kip, the alarm goes off and my car's facing south and go to Derby. Yeah, so it's been a massive turnaround. And the best way I can put it in an analogy is really that, like, I've bought a new house. I'm looking forward to move to my new house, but I've had to leave my old house. And when you leave your old house and you shut the front door, you have all the memories of your old house. Like, my kids have grown up in my old house. You know, you had laughter in the old house. It's a bit like that leaving the football club. Like, I haven't left under any animosity, under any cloud. I always wanted to walk out the front door and think, look, we've done the best we could do. We've done everything we can and we can leave with our head held high. And that is what I always wanted to do.
Yeah, you're making me a little bit teary, but I guess I've known you long enough that actually, believe it or not, I don't just scratch this together on the back of a postage stamp. I do prepare for these kind of chats. And probably my second question is sense of loss. So before the enthusiasm for this brilliant opportunity for you, there is that sense that you won't have those phone calls to Tony Stewart, the owner of Rotherham, that you used to quite as regularly, or you won't have that to-ing and fro-ing with the whole infrastructure of people that have led Rotherham to their current fine start to the Sky Bet Championship season.
Yeah, it is bittersweet, really. When I went to see the owner, I prepped the players really on the Tuesday morning and said, look, I'm not going to lie to you. I've never lied to my players. I just said, look, this is the situation. I think there's an opportunity that we may be leaving. I'm going to have a conversation with the owner and see how that goes. But like I said, when I went to see the owner, he was brilliant. And in a weird way, it made it worse. It would have been easier for me if he'd have said, you know, oh, I'm not happy with this. This is a disgrace. You doing this. And I could have had a, a proper old fashioned rare up, got in my car and thought, right, I made the right decision. That wasn't the case. And it made it worse for me. I got in my car and I was a bit emotional, really, thinking, wow, you know, for the last 6 years, I've driven to the chairman's house or his office and, you know, sat with him for probably 6-7 hours a week at least. So it was a big part of my life. I really befriended the chairman and had a really good relationship with him. I learned a lot about myself during that period. So that was hard, but even harder with the players and the staff. I spend virtually, you know, 6 days a week, depending on 40 odd weeks of the year for the last 6 years. It's a lot of time spent in people's company and and being the all them staff, all them players, everyone within the football side of the football club are all my people. Everyone's been employed by me or brought in by me. So yeah, so it was a big wrench, and it wasn't an easy decision. And I had many ups and downs on my decision. One minute I'm going, one morning I woke up and said to Mrs. Watt, I'm going. She went, oh great, you've made your decision. And then 2 hours later I wasn't going. So it wasn't an easy decision. But I've been at Derby now for 2 days, and I think it was the right decision. I met all the players last night at Rotherham. I told Derby I was doing it. There's nothing sneaky about it. I just took them all out for a goodbye drink and hugged them all and wished them all the best for the game against Wigan at the weekend. So it has been really bittersweet. And you know what I'm like? I'm an emotional leader. I'm a people's person. I get to know people. I get to know their families. And it probably made it harder. If I was, you know, a different sort of manager and people jump from club to club all the time, they, you know, I'm not saying that's bad or good. I'm just saying different people. That isn't me. I think it'd probably be easier. But for me, it was a massive wrench. My last home game, my wife knew it was going to be my last home game, I think. I remember looking at her when I walked off the pitch. She was in absolute tears. My daughter said she was an absolute embarrassment. She was crying all the time, but she couldn't tell anyone around her what she knew. And we're no different than anybody else. People, like when Bury Football Club collapsed, I thought it was so sad that people turn up to a game, have had these friendships, and they don't see them people again. It's no different for my wife or for me. It's the same for us. We've built massive friendships at this club. I've had numerous texts. I've had the three main sponsors reach out to me. And I know, you know, it wasn't an easy decision, but it was an emotional decision, but one I think was right.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of painting a subculture to the modern game, and then this integrity of going and sharing before the finite decision has been made. I mean, you know what football is like, you know, love it or hate it, part of parcel of the game or not. There's a lot of sneaking about, but you've just, I guess you've painted a picture of your own integrity there, Paul, that you did put it all before people, before ultimately it was over the line there. But those are the values that have led you to your achievements in the game so far.
Yeah, thanks. And I thought, like, my what you're saying about my integrity, I just thought I wanted to speak to the players. I want to speak to the owner. I hadn't made a decision, or I sort of had before I spoke to the owner. I knew that, I thought that's what I wanted to do. But with the players, there was that much about us being linked to clubs nearby and other championship clubs, and I knew the players could feel it because it was beginning to come into my post-match interview. So I wanted to tell them the truth that, you know, I thought there was a potential that we were going to be leaving. I was going to speak to the owner in the afternoon and I would let them all know. And that's what I did. I phoned the captain after and let him know what my decision was and said, you know, if the bid's accepted, I think, you know, that's where I'm going to be. But if the bid isn't accepted, you'll see me back in Thursday morning. So I tried to keep the lads all in the picture, and, you know, I try and lead with trust and honesty. So, you know, I can't be a hypocrite.
Yeah. Just on the practicalities front, what is the interim temporary loan car, by the way? What would Derby County have lent you, please? I can only see your chin and the roof of it as I talk to you now.
It's an X3.
On that practical front,
yeah.
I mean, you know, you're a man that presumably, if I was to open your wardrobe at home, would just be a large collection of Rotherham United training tops, Rotherham United tracksuits, Rotherham United track bottoms, trainers endorsed by the Rotherham United brand of kit manufacturer. I mean, There's a bit of clearing out there today. I know these are not like essential football questions. There are more of those to come. But just on that practical note, Is Rach running around with a bin liner today, scooping up and return? And do you have to return the kit to Rotherham, or are you allowed to keep it?
Well, my son is a first-year pro at Rotherham, so I'm going to sort of give him a lot of stuff tomorrow just to take back to the kit man, I think, and say, look, if you can... I mean, it's maybe a Yorkshire thing. If you can recycle stuff, if you can scratch my initials off stuff, and if you can sign a manager who's probably 10 stone wet through, then it can be reused. But I've got loads of hats. I love hats, as you well know. I'm a bit hat obsessed. In fact, yesterday, after I did my press at Derby, I went to the club shop and bought myself 3 hats. I was highly excited by buying new hats. So the nice thing was the girl who served me had no idea. The lady who took me in said I was their staff discount. She went, is it for you? She went, no, this is Paul. She went, okay, he's the new manager. And she went, oh, okay, thanks. And so that was quite an amazing moment. So I bought some new hats. You're right. We were Puma. So I bought all Puma trainers, Puma bags, everything, because I liked everything to match, a bit OCD. So you're right. I've got a few things to get rid of. Sounds a bit harsh. Recycle is probably a nicer way to put it.
Okay. Risk. I mean, you know, you will have bumped into a lot of managers who took the leap, and for some it worked out, for some it didn't. Did you know that ultimately there would be a sell-by date expiry at Rotherham where you would have to move, or your chances of being on the run that you've been on for the last 6-7 years would diminish?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, especially modern football, the fact that we survived 6 years is quite impressive, considering, you know, I take responsibility for 2 relegations on top of that. The fact that the chairman stuck with me was quite impressive. And maybe I spoke to the owner earlier in the season when he offered me a new contract. And I was saying, look, chairman, let's just see how the season goes, because if, you know, we lose 6 on the spin, you're going to have to let me go. And he's like, look, yeah, we won't sack you, Paul. We won't. I went, but chairman, it isn't you who sacks me. It's the fans that sack me. And the expectation ramps up every time. And I just felt that I was disappointed we didn't win the league and the cup last year, being a bit greedy. But, you know, going up automatic and the way it happened and the cup, it just seemed fitting to end there. I always wanted to leave because, you know, my son plays at Rotherham, my kids are Rotherham fans, my wife's been to every game, home and away, virtually, well, not every away game, but all my best friends in the town are Rotherham fans. I just wanted to leave, not being forced out, but I walked out. I never wanted to be sacked here. Like, I've been here for 20 years, I've loved it, and I never wanted my relationship with the fans to sour. So whether that's cowardly or not, I don't know. And maybe I could have had another 3 or 4 years there. I don't know. But it just seemed like, look, the stars are aligned. It seemed perfect. I've had a few opportunities to leave in the past that haven't interested me. However, the Derby one was a different level, really.
Preparing to go in to Derby's training ground the first time and meet the players for the first time. And you said that there was a prior commitment that meant you went away over the weekend. You're the sort of person that was deliberating over what those first few impact lines would be as you gathered the players around you, so you hit the ground running? Are you worried about the transfer of your personal brand and characteristics and authenticity and how it would translate to, no disrespect to Rotherham, a slightly bigger stage?
Yeah, 100%. I think... But the fact that we signed Wednesday and the compensation sort of went through Thursday, so it didn't get announced till Thursday. And the lads had been given the time off for international break. We weren't meeting until Monday. I had loads of time. I was playing golf with Richie and Hammy, and I kept thinking, right, I'm going to say this, I'm going to say that, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Right, I need to reach out to him. I had loads of, not demons, too much thought. Truth be told, too much thought. And then in the end, I'd reached out to all the heads of the staff. I'd spoke to Curtis Davis at length. And then over the weekend, which was quite nice, I got a few people reaching out to me who knew a Derby player had reached out to them. So for example, John Taylor and Joe Newell, two of my favourite Rotherham players of all time who I managed, were at a party with James Collins, my new striker. At Derby. So they sent a picture of them three going, this guy will get you promoted, Gaffer, and all that. So I was texting them back and having a laugh and a joke. And then really it made me realise over the weekend that, look, although Derby players, you know, I don't want to be offensive, but, you know, may have had better careers or, you know, are at a bigger club, whatever you want to say, and you think, oh, these are going to be different. They're not. They're just the same lads who have just been signed by a different club. In the same way, I'm the same manager that I was a week ago. I just work at a different football club. So I decided, well, I'm not going to change. I'm not going to, like, over-prepare. Just on day one, I just talked to them for about 10 minutes, if that, just about who I am and what I expect and what I will change in the culture thing. There's certain things at the football club that I want to change, and but my principles are what I stand for as a man and what I want them to stand for as men. And that was it. I didn't do a massive presentation and massive fireworks display. It was more about the fact that this is how we're going to play. This is what I expect. And, you know, I think you'll have a good time. Really, that was sort of it. But I did, you're right, I did consider it so many times, too many times, really. And then in the end, I went down the, look, the all my talks, every time I speak to players, when I speak to the press, whatever, I don't plan anything. I just go with my heart. So I thought, right, you know, that's who you are. Just go with who you are. And if it isn't good enough, then that's who I am. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to pretend. I'm not going to act. I'm not going to, you know, over-prepare and be too anal. I'm just going to go with my heart. So that's how I roll.
You mentioned Richie Barker. You mentioned Matt Hampshire, you're playing golf with. You also taken Andy Warrington, the goalkeeping coach, as well. I wonder if actually theirs was an even bigger leap, because you are a manager as opposed to a coach. You are a culture guy and all the rest of it. So they were probably the ones that had to establish credibility almost immediately during the first training session.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, in fairness, when I introduced, like, I mean, I've said this on numerous occasions, without them three, I wouldn't have gone 100%. Like, our success is that we're like the four musketeers. It's all or nothing. And they were right behind the move. They didn't have such deliberation as I did. So I knew that that's what they wanted to do. And I felt, even when I had the moments where I wasn't sure if that's what I should do, I felt like I should do it for them, if that makes sense. So you're right. When we went in the first day, like, Richie Hammy have to put the sessions on. Andy has to work with the goalkeepers, whereas I can just, you know, talk to the players, walk around the group, say hello, introduce myself. You know, I have all that sort of relationship building that I do, which, you're right, Richie probably had the biggest part to play on day one, but Richie's an unbelievable football coach. So I could walk into Manchester United, like, I'm not going to be a Manchester United manager, I'm not an idiot, but we could walk into Manchester United, Rich would have no problem coaching them in any way. He fully backs himself, as he should, because he's a very good coach. Whereas, so after 20 minutes, I think the players are thinking, wow, it was a pressing drill. It was us shouting at them. They're thinking, right, here we go, that these are full on. So that isn't so much of a problem. It's a harder thing for me, because I think I'm a relationship leader and I have to get trust into the players that I can't just do that in the first 20 minutes. Like, I've had a meeting with the strikers, I've had a meeting with the captain, and there's only so many minutes in the day. So I need to keep building, finding out stuff about and what makes them tick. So it's probably harder for me, although, you know, my coaches have an instant hit and an instant, like, release. I take certain parts of the session, but not a lot. I'm more of a slow burner, I think. I might not be.
Because of your backgrounds, you know, teaching qualifications, coming from non-league football, working your way through, perhaps reluctant hero being thrown in at Rotherham in the aftermath of Kenny Jackett's departure. Are you nervous? Are you acting as if you appear your authentic self today, but inside, are you looking at immediate predecessors, Wayne Rooney, Philip Cocu, Frank Lampard, whoever, going way back across history, all those mercurial names and the league titles under Dave Mackay and Brian Clough, etc. Are you, does that make you nervous?
No, not really. I mean, don't get me wrong, I will be nervous on a match day, and I am all the time, as you well know, but I don't feel nervous at all at the moment. Maybe because since we've been at the club, everyone's made us so welcome and they're so pleased that we're so friendly and open, and it's made me feel great. And in fairness, I spoke to the owner on Tuesday and I'm speaking to him again, meeting him again tomorrow. And he's sort of saying to me, look, this is a long-term plan. We've brought you in, you know, I don't expect instant success. We just want to see you try and build the club in your culture. So I don't think, I know the fans are going to want me to win every game, obviously, but I'm also aware that's not possible. But I do feel the fact that we've been at Rotherham for a long period and someone has come in and paid a lot of money to get us out gives you a real boost in confidence, really. And I understand the pressures, but I also understand that, look, there's loads of very good teams in League Three, really. It's League Three. So, look, I'm not taking Derby over mid-Premier League trying to get them into the Champions League. I'm trying to help them get out of this tough league. And maybe we don't give ourselves as much credit as we should as a staff, but my staff have done really well. So why shouldn't we do really well at Derby? I don't have the same self-doubt. Although you are speaking to me prior to a run of, like, you know, 12 games in 6 weeks or whatever. So I could have a completely different outlook. The only thing I do know is that my coaches are brilliant. I think we try and play football. Obviously, everyone tries to play football to win, but we try and attack every game, try and win every game. And I probably won't, I don't feel as self-critical because, you know, we've got better resources, potentially on paper, maybe better players as an average. And they're just human like I am. They're not superstars. They've not got massive egos that I've noticed. They're just lads who want to get promoted. And if you get a group like that and you get a group of staff and you get a fan base that believe in what you're trying to do, you give yourself a right chance. So no, I don't feel terrified by it. I remember driving down and it was Brian Clough Way and all that going into Derby. I was thinking, wow. The only thing is, and you know what I'm like, I don't want to go down this too much, but I wish my father was here to see me managing Derby. I think that would literally blow his mind, as it will my mum, because I'll get her up for the first game. But I'm not intimidated by it. Really, all I do is manage. I know I have more staff, but I still just manage the most important people at the football club in my eyes, and I know is the owner and the players. The fans, you know, will like or not like me on what the players do, not on, you know, what I say. So I don't think it's a big job, as in that, you know, everyone wants success, but everyone wanted success at Rotherham. Every League One game, everyone wanted to win. Every Championship game, they want a performance and win. I don't think, the only difference is there's more vocality, there's more noise, there's more, if there's, you know, 10% dissenters at Rotherham, that could be, you know, 900 people. If there's 10% at Derby, that could be 3,000 people. So that part is a little bit scary and potentially it will sink in. But the job itself is manage people, make them feel great about themselves, make them love, make them be positive, make them be relentless and make it enjoyable. And I don't think the size of the club makes a big difference in that.
Paul, your father is with you. He's with you in your head. He's with you on your shoulders. He's with you with all that he passed on to you, mate, that has been part of your mix. What is that cap you've just put on? I can't quite see as I look there.
Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers.
It's in the right colours. And I notice when you send messages these days, you've already, well, I don't think there is an emoji for Rams, is there? But you're managing to use the sheep in quite a positive way.
Yeah, that's the closest I can get. And in fairness, you're the only one who's noticed. So I put on my text, go Rams, and put that little sheep, and no one else has really noticed. So that is very good from you. Now you've told everyone, I'm going to have to literally somehow get some emoji genius to get me one.
This is a question that I could only ask to one or two managers, and you are one of them. Is the money life-changing?
Definitely not. In fairness, my wages have just gone up a little bit. That is the truth. And in fairness, if I wanted to renegotiate with the club I was at, I could have got paid the same money. If I do get the team promoted, I do earn more money, but it isn't a life-changing money. And I didn't even negotiate. I was happy with what they offered me. And I said, that's fine. It isn't life-changing. But life is about experiences, not about cash, not about what car. I say, what car you drive. I like a big boot on my car. That's it. But that doesn't drive me. It doesn't drive me at all. I'll never leave the house I live in. I don't need anything. I mean, don't get me wrong. If they'd offered me £5 million a year, I wouldn't have turned around and said, no, keep it. But this the reason why I've took this job on is because out of all the sort of jobs, you know, I've been linked to or spoken about, or, you know, they've spoke to my agent, this one, the owner was all about, he wants to build it up. But when I spoke to him, it was about, I said, I asked him, because that's who I am, like, well, why do you want me to run your football club? Because it's a massive honour, but why me? Why no one else? And he said, well, twofold. One, your League One record is pretty impressive, which was nice. Always start off with a compliment. And the second reason is, he said that he liked my integrity and who I stood for as a man. He'd watched loads of my interviews. He'd heard loads of things, read things, been told things. And he thought that my moral compass mirrored his, which was beyond flattering, to be honest. I was more impressed with that than the promotions. So the fact that he wanted someone like that to run his football club, and obviously it's about winning, I know that, but I think football clubs should be more than that. So the fact that he wanted me to, you know, manage his amazing staff and how many there is and the academy and oversee everything and try and push the club forward and, you know, improve it in the community and everything evolved around me was really flattering. And that's what impressed me more than, like, anyone, I tell this to my mum all the time, anyone can, if you've got money, can, you know, get a promotion, really, just buy the best players from the league above. But the fact that he liked me, who I was as a man, meant a lot to me.
Mate, I am absolutely delighted for you. Don't change, will you? Keep being the authentic you. Don't get bitty big time about the size of the car that your new club...
I won't do that, mate. I won't do that. Are we still recording, by the way?
No, I've just been sitting here for the last half an hour chatting away to you just for social purposes, using up internet bandwidth and stuff like that. Yeah, of course we're still recording. Like, thanks for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Cheers, buddy. Bye-bye.
This is the official EFL podcast.
There are times in an EFL season when only a calming, wise old head will do. And here's one I prepared earlier. Phil Brown is a former Derby County manager and Hull City. Of course, he led to the Premier League for the first time in their 104-year history. And Preston North End, Southend United twice, winning the League Two playoffs in his first spell, plus Swindon Town and Barrow. And before we get down to the, I'm going to call it, managerial turmoil that seems to have turned off again, we need to do the private stuff. Philip, you look tremendous for a man who has a baby of what kind of age these days?
Monty's 8 months now. He was 8 months last Monday, strangely enough. And I've just dropped him off at nursery and followed by a round of golf at Burford. So it's been quite a full day, but I had to dash back to this interview, Clem. Nothing would give me greater pleasure than give you a few wise words if I could do.
Yeah, perfect. I'm sure you were expecting, we were looking for a calming, wise old head, but we could only find Phil Brown. But I thought, it's too obvious, so I won't do it. You look fantastic. Are you a man of leisure at the moment? And are you happy to be a man of leisure at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose you could say a leisure compared to football management, Clem. You know, I mean, you know what it's like. It's a million miles an hour. You try and stop the world and get on it, and it's difficult because, you know, that's just the pace that the game goes at, you know, and it's quite phenomenal. And don't get me wrong, I'm enjoying life outside of football, but at the same time, doing two or three games a week. And it doesn't matter what game I go to, I'm going to watch a game of football for watching a game of football's sake. You know, it's in my blood, it always has been. If I wasn't an electrician beforehand, I was a football supporter at Sunderland on the terraces at the Fulwell end. It's always been in my blood. And fortunately, I went to see Sunderland just recently. It was at Reading. I got a call from Paul Ince and he put a couple of tickets on for me, which I think is a great gesture when you get managers that have been in the game as long as what Paul has and then out of the game as long as what Paul has. And then he realises that what it's like, you know, when you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs and chewing your nails, fingernails, and trying to get back into the game. And it's difficult because when you're sitting in the stand, everybody thinks you're there for a reason. And it's so horrible. You're there for the one reason. The only reason is the fact that you love football.
Do you know what? I want to pick up on a point as a side tangent here, but As a couple of blokes that are in advanced career years, although you have an effervescent youngster spirit, we've probably got to be careful of slagging off social media too much. But I wonder whether there is a danger There is so much stuff put out of a random fan who spots you in the crowd at a game and then puts two and two together, invents a story. It gets retweeted a few times. Before you know it, the local newspaper or local website who are stuck for news that week get hold of it. There's so much garbage around, Phil, is there not, around the that surrounds the game these days?
Regardless of social media, the media itself, the world of football, how small it is and yet how big it is at the same time, has really, it stuck me in a fine mess with Sir Alex Ferguson. Having sat in the stand watching a game, and I'm talking about, 2012, 2013, I'd been relieved of my duties at Hull City. I was on gardening leave and I went to a Preston North End Middlesbrough game. And Sir Alex's son was in charge at Preston North End, and he was in a bit of trouble. They were bottom of the league, and et cetera, et cetera. And me and Brian Horton were spotted at the game. I mean, Brian Horton's vast experience, even probably as much experience as Sir Alex Ferguson himself in terms of games. And we're sitting there as, ex-manager and ex-assistant manager of Hull City, and two was put together. And the next thing you know, I'm getting a call from Sir Alex Ferguson saying I was trying to undermine his son. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. That's from the top, that, let alone somebody on social media who spots you at a crowd and puts two and two together and gets fired.
Wait a second. Did you not get the job at Preston off the back of Darren Ferguson?
Well, I did. I did get the job. But again, it was, without going into it too much, there was nothing untoward at all. Brian Horton is one of the most genuine, honest men you'll ever get in the game. And we were going to a match because he lived in Manchester and I lived in Bolton, and Preston was just down the road. It was as simple as that. Why that should automatically say that you're going to get the job at Preston North End, and then coincidentally 2 weeks down the line, you do get the job. So you understand what people think. But I was there watching a game of football. It was as simple as that. I wasn't invited there by anybody. I was there watching a game of football.
So to that end then, when we're kind of going to do the end of the chat I wanted to have about managers first, but to that end, does an out-of-work manager actually have to be very careful where they go and almost leave a little audit trail of ringing the managers of the clubs that they're going to go and watch that weekend and say, I'm not here for sinister reasons, I'm just going to go and watch again? Are you actually watching your back there so that you don't start these?
That in itself, as soon as you put that call in, it suggests that that's the reason, the skullduggery going on, this, it's crazy. Listen, Clem, if somebody spotted me in the forward end in the cage in 1978, would he ever have said I was going to play professional football 700 times? At every level and managing every level, where it takes you, it's your love of the game. It's as simple as that. If anybody knows me, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's my love of the game that I was at Sunderland versus Reading, nothing on Paul Ince and nothing on Mogger, who's just gone in at Sunderland. And then the following game, I was at Southend United versus Wrexham. Different league, different level. Gone there because I was in Southend for the weekend and seeing family. And I went to the Southend Wrexham game. I mean, there's no ulterior motive. Following game, I'll be at Orient, and I'm all over the place. But I'm going to watch games, and I'm watching players, and I'm watching tacticians and modern-day managers work. And I think, being 63, people think you're coming to the end of your career. I'm keeping up to speed with these young'uns. These young'uns are fantastic coaches, and they're great exponents of the beautiful game. But they're also missing a trick in terms of how you can set yourself up defensively better. Which is my strength or my forte. But I'm taking a leaf out of their book, trying to improve the way I play, my team plays. So it's all, you cat and mouse to a certain extent, but there's no skullduggery involved in me going to a game of football, trust me.
I was uplifted enough because I can see you and I'm enjoying the magnitude of your golf shirt. But I mean, good Lord, just talking to you, you've increased my energy levels by 20%.
Well, put it this way, Clem, before you go any further, if anybody, if Phil Mickelson see me on the tee at Burford, would he be feeling threatened? Maybe buy me golf attire, that's about it.
We have just spoken to Paul Warren.
Yeah.
And I wanted to debate with you the case for moving on be the case for staying. Paul Warren has finally taken the plunge and gone to, no disrespect, Rotherham United fans, bigger job. Gareth Ainsworth, on the other hand, at the weekend celebrated his 10-year anniversary of Wycombe Wanderers. So there's the case for being a big fish in a small pond, in control of circumstances, happy with your owners, v. what that point is where you have to take the plunge and move on. What are your thoughts, Philip?
I think it's so personal that to the individual that it's very difficult to, when the situation arises, I think the next interview I would be doing with Gareth Ainsworth would be, how many jobs have you been offered in them 10 years? How many chances have you had and turned down in them 10 years to stay at Wycombe Wanderers? And don't get me wrong, I was there at Wembley standing alongside him on his worst day probably of them 10 years, where they didn't get promoted and they were 1-0 up in the 123rd minute of the game. And we managed to equalise and beat them on penalties. We then went on to do well in the first division, knocked at the door of the championship. I had a year in the first division and I found myself out of work a year and a half after that game, and Gareth found himself in the second division again and managed to get promoted and the rest's history. He's done a fabulous job. If I'm a Wycombe Wanderers supporter, I am very proud of my football club because of the manager. And it's very hard to say that, because not many supporters will say that about their club and their managers. He's one of a few. He's one of a chosen few that have decided that the club is bigger than the game. And it's a brave decision, very, very brave decision. And then you have one or two managers of late who've decided to move on because of ambition, getting in the way to a certain extent, if you want to call it that. And it's they've sacrificed a career and moved upwards what they think. And it's been a wrongful move, because within a year they're out of work and staring at oblivion, as opposed to being in work, i.e. Robert Forest Green Rovers, who took the plunge from a club that's very, very... You have to say it, that, you know, Forest Green Rovers are one of the most genuinely well-run football clubs for various reasons, great reasons, if you like, saving the planet and stuff like that. This is a tremendous project that they have going at Forest Green Rovers, and Rob decided to up sticks and go to Watford because of ambition, because of Watford being in the division that they're in, and in a very ambitious club. But walking into an absolute, you know, firing line that, you know, if he wasn't in the top six in the championship, he would be out of work. And lo and behold, I look at the league table, they're top 10, and he's found himself out of work. And it's crazy, but it all depends on that individual. It really does. I mean, I take my hat off to Gareth Ainsworth every time I see him. Every time I see him, I have a great conversation with him. But it's not always about football. It's about other things in life that Rob, you know, maybe focused on football too much. And whereas Gareth focuses, everyone knows his passion for football, but he has a passion outside of that for music and business interests, et cetera, et cetera. All of them things are so important in the world that we live in.
I'm going to read you Scott Duxbury, the chief executive of Watford's comments when Rob was appointed. We will be supportive of Rob come hell or high water. And after 10 games, the owner Gino Pozzo said of Rob, we felt Rob had had enough time to show us the identity of his team and performances have not reflected our hopes and ambitions. I wonder whether there's a point with, say, Rob, big opportunity, perhaps a bit of a step up in money. Perhaps we could draw parallels with Graham Potter taking over at Chelsea, where you just have to go for it. Maybe the money is life-changing, or maybe you think, I may never get this opportunity again. So regardless of past track record of the club or owner that you're going into, you think, I have to do it.
Clem, you must have interviewed many a manager and many a manager that's been sacked. I had this ignorance about me when I first went into management. I had served my apprenticeship under Sam Allardyce, as you well know, flying under the radar as an assistant manager. The real one that's putting his head above the parapet, regardless of what position you hold at a football club, the real one that puts his head above the parapet is the manager. Not even the owner, you could say that, but you would say the manager. And when that head goes above, you're going to be shot at. And you have to be, well, it's difficult to describe. You have to be steel, you have to be rigid, you have to be solid, you have to have great character to be able to do that. But you also have to have a great management structure or infrastructure that you can trust people. And when Rob's gone into Watford, he's known full well the history of the football club. So he knew the ideals and the parameters and what was actually going to happen if he wasn't in the top six. And I'm genuinely saying, if he wasn't in the top six, if he genuinely wasn't looking at promotion, or more importantly, the owners weren't genuinely looking at promotion from the Championship to the Premier League in that first season, one, based on results, two, based on league tables, three, based on performance. Performance these days is so important. It's your philosophy is so important. And I've foolishly looked at philosophy and thought, what is it? What does it mean? I mean, surely you can walk into an interview and say, my philosophy is to play the beautiful way. We'll start from the back. We'll start with two centre-halves in the six-yard box with the goalkeeper, and that's the way we'll play. All well and good if you've got the players to do that. If you haven't got the players or the budget to do that, you'd be a foolish man to do that. So consequently, he finds himself 10th in the table with 14 points. Teams above him, like Sunderland, changed managers recently, and they're fifth top in the division, and they're catchable. They've only got 50. You know, the table's tight, to say the least. Sheffield United have had a fantastic start. Norwich look like, you know, they're a yo-yo team, and they look like they're quite capable of going back up again. Reading started off poorly. I had a conversation with Paul Ince, and it was quite ironic, the conversation that we had, because after a couple of games, the supporters were calling for his head. And then after six games, he had won three or four on the bounce, and he was the best thing since sliced bread. So that's the ideal. That's the game that we live in. That's, more importantly, the world that we live in. So forget about philosophy. It's all about results. It is all about results. And Watford have proved that now.
Phil, is this tenable? Because it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. Or is there a never-ending, inexhaustible supply of you who will still line up and go back into the trenches to take a role? And while we're on, let me ask you another one. Is it fair that the manager becomes the fall guy constantly in this situation?
Football is becoming a little bit more transparent. And what I mean by more transparent is that the committee that selects the players, the committee that brings the players in to provide the manager with the tools of his trade, is not what it was 10 years ago. You know, the 10 years ago, it was the manager. The manager had agents lined up. He had players lined up. He had this, that, and the other. That was all under his control, under his guidance. Now, there's a committee, and that committee has become more and more transparent. We can see them. Chief executive, directors of football, European scouts, European this, that, and the other. It's becoming more and more transparent at the top. The lower down you go, you can't really afford as many people or shall we say, a select committee, shall we say. You can't really afford that. So the manager has to have a bigger say, probably the lower down in the leagues.
Your mate, Sam Allardyce,
yeah,
does famously say, you're not a manager until you've had the sack. Do you, which it seems bizarre thing for me to say to you, but do you agree? Do you have to go through that experience? And I think apart from Pep, I can't think of another manager who hasn't been sacked in their career. So is it just part and parcel of the role?
If we go back to the question where Sam Allardyce was concerned and his statement, I categorically state that when I left his cradle, I was in his arms. He was looking after me as an assistant manager at Bolton Wanderers.
What an image you're painting.
I know, horrendous. And he said, he always asked me the question, Brownie, put me on your CV as your referee so that you don't undermine us as a pair, as a partnership, as a management team. So at least I know when you're applying for jobs, they come and ask me the question, what's he like, this, that, and the other. And I only ever applied for three jobs in the 7 years when we were together. Them three jobs were Burnley. Steve Cottrell got the job. I finished second, so everybody tells me. West Bromwich Albion, Brian Robson got the job. I finished second. And Derby County, and I got the job. Sam recommended me as a manager, and he knew straight away, as soon as I left, that he had to replace me. Sammy Lee came in. So he was thinking ahead all the time because of my ambition. But he said to me, I'm telling you, Brownie, he'll get the sack. No matter how good you think you are, no matter how confident you believe you are and how positive you are and this, that, and the other, the game gets you. Circumstances will get you. But I'm telling you, from leaving Derby, coming back to my house in Bolton, I'm on the M6 coming north. Peter Reid phoned me up. Bobby Saxton phoned me up. Jack Chapman, God rest his soul, phoned me up. And Sam Allardyce. And all four of them, exactly the same. I told you so. I told you so. Now, they weren't saying you were rubbish. They weren't saying you were poor at your job. We just told you. Now, this will make you a manager or not, whichever the case may be. And I had to wait 12 months to get my next gig. My next gig was a coach under Phil Parkinson at Hull City. And I then fortunately got the job as the manager of Hull City, and the rest is history, as it were. But without that sacking and that learning curve that I had at Derby County, I would not be the man that I was, or not be the manager that I was, and I wouldn't have had the success that I had.
For most people in everyday life, being relieved of your work responsibilities would be one of those life moments. It would be one of the most horrendous things. I can't imagine what it's like, Phil, to do that in the glare of, well, I'm going to describe it as public humiliation. Now, there's no slur on the manager involved at that time, but the very fact that you're being put through the mill and through that scenario in a public arena, as opposed to, Lord forbid, somebody gets sacked as deputy chief executive at the local engineering firm. Fingers crossed their business is not going to be pulled across all the wires, the papers, across social media. How does it feel, that moment and the immediate aftermath and readjustment?
Quite simply, it's the most horrific thing outside of death or family bereavement that can hit you. And I mean that sincerely, and I'm not being disrespectful of anybody or anything there. It's just a lonely moment. It's a horrible moment. You are publicly, disrespected, disregarded, laughed at. And you have to dust yourself down and get on with the next gig if it ever comes along. And I was staring at statistics of 75% of first-time managers don't get a second opportunity. When I got the second opportunity, that statistic was gone then. It was on the back burner. It was on the wave behind. It was almost like, this is my life now. I've chose my life now. I can't go back to coaching. I can't go back to being an assistant. You lose that level of trust to a certain extent because people see your ambition. It's blatantly obvious that you want to be a manager and it's out there. So why would any manager take you again as an assistant? They wouldn't. And it's not easy, Clem, but you have to have the strength of character. If you're going to put your head above the parapet as a manager, you're going to have to put your head above the parapet when you're out of work as well, and tell people that you're good enough. Regardless of what's happened to you, you're still good enough for this job.
There's a never-ending supply of you guys wanting to take jobs. There were three vacancies in the Sky Bet Championship, Rotherham United, Cardiff City, and there was a vacancy at Huddersfield Town, but it has been filled by Mark Fotheringham. He's their new head coach. He's 38. He's coached in Germany and Scotland, most recently as Felix Magath's assistant at Hertha Berlin. He's a former Celtic trainee, played for clubs such as Dundee, Freiburg and Norwich. 276 game career as a player, served his coaching apprenticeship in spells at Fulham. Ooh, I wish I'd practiced this one. At Fulham, Ingolstadt and Karlsruhe. It's his first management job. Do you understand an appointment like that or not?
I think I do. I think it smells of, the tried and tested sometimes come along and they've proven wrong. You know, they've failed. They've been here, seen it and done it, and they're doing it again, as it were. I think Huddersfield is an example of a club that was very, very well run. I'm talking about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even longer ago. And Brian Horton had a good insight into Huddersfield as an ex-manager, I believe. And it was one of them clubs that you think, well, this looks like the type of gig that you would like as a manager, because it looks like it's got its facilities right. It looks like it's got its philosophy right. It looks like, the training ground and the stadium were all in place. And it looked like a club that was on the move, on the way up and going towards the Premier League. And then it became that club that made the Premier League and come back down, and it's sort of died a wee bit of late. Now, having looked at that and said what I've said there, would I have turned down the opportunity of managing Huddersfield Town? Not a chance. It's a great football club. It's a great opportunity for Mark. As a 38-year-old, you've just read his CV out there, and it suggests that this guy is prepared to travel. This guy is prepared to go and learn different cultures, different languages, different styles of play, if you like. And Germany not being a bad reference, in my opinion. I watched the Germany-England game, and the way they play football, my word, it's quite admirable. It's quite something to almost like taking the game to the next level again. The Germans have always been renowned as being that well-oiled machine, as it were. And they've looked at the way, you know, the styles of football in England and around the world, and they've decided to try and master that style. Gundogan was a great example of that the other night, where he just brought good players towards him by passing the ball, lending, and then all of a sudden playing a longer pass to try and expose somebody on a numbers basis. So all of them things, I think, will probably have been part and parcel of his interviewing process of how he thinks the game should be played. But first and foremost, he's got to get Huddersfield away from the relegation zone. And how do you do that? Immediately, with the squad that you've got. Windows have closed. You now got the squad you've got to work with. They're obviously, the board and the owners rate the squad that they're working with, and they're giving them an opportunity to try and steady the ship. Now, will there be some kind of, I don't know, will there be some kind of challenge this year to get into the playoffs? You can't put a manager who's just inherited a club that's second bottom, you can't put them in that situation straight away if they've got any sense. And I know they will have. It will be a case of survival this year, safety, steady the ship, and then push on next year. And if something happens this year, all well and good. Well played, Mark. But, you know, it's a precarious position, to say the least.
It is. But, of course, expectations are high because they missed out in the playoff final last time around. So this is the problem. But he will know that as he steps into the situation. Your Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend. Your Friday night match is Hull City entertaining Luton Town. Then on Saturday, these are all 3 o'clock kickoffs. Norwich currently second, won 6 of their last 7. They travel to Blackpool. QPR in 6th go to Bristol City. Burnley in 4th go to Cardiff City. Mark Hudson, as we understand it, will caretake in that match. Coventry still seeking their first win at the bottom of the table, entertain Middlesbrough. Mark Fotheringham's first match in charge of Huddersfield Town will be to travel to third-placed Reading. Sheffield United, the leaders, dropped just 7 points from their first possible 30, entertain Birmingham City. And fifth-placed Sunderland are at home to Preston. The other scenario I wanted to raise with you, Phil, was Skybet League One, Oxford United, taken over by Indonesian businessmen Anindya Bakri and Eric Thohir. Just the situation from the manager's point of view. Now, these guys have been in and around the club, I think I'm right in saying, as minority shareholders for a little while. It's taken a long time to get this over the line. How does that affect a manager, Will? Carl's not had a brilliant start to the season. Will he be feeling a little bit nervous at a takeover as to what it might mean for his position?
I don't think Carl will ever, you know, tell you that he feels a little bit precarious or nervous with regards to a takeover. If they've been in and around the club, I know for a fact Carl's the type of person that would approach that and want to know a little bit more. He's a bit a chip off the old block where Sam's concerned. He likes to get his fingers in every pie, how every department is being run within the football club, and he wants to have a little say in the matter where that's concerned. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. A manager wanting to know the ins and outs of his whole football club. Oxford United's always been it's not far from me. Carl's invited me down on a couple of occasions, and you know, he's a brilliant coach. He's ahead of the game. He's one of them that, you know, he has drones watching, you know, the movement of the players, and he feeds that back to the players. He always tries to improve the product. He always tries to improve the player. He's got, you know, the heart rate data, everything. He actually, as I say, that chip off the old block where Sam's concerned, every little angle he can get to try and beat the opposition, he will try and steal a percent here, steal a percent there. But the takeover of a football club is quite frowned upon. It's one of them. It's a big thing. It's a massive thing where the club's concerned. Everybody will be feeling a little bit nervous where that's concerned. How the new boy's going to run it? What changes are they going to make? Will heads roll? Will there be more investment? All of these things need to be answered. But again, going back to football, Carl needs to start winning games of football. He knows that more than anybody. He's been at Oxford now four and a half years. He needs to start winning games of football because had a great season last year and missed out in the playoffs. And I watched him a couple of times and his team was outstanding. But he missed out in the playoffs and a couple of big games towards the end of the season. And he hasn't started well this year. So he needs to start winning games. It's as simple as that.
Your fixtures in Skybet League One this coming weekend. Sixth place, Bolton entertain Lincoln City. Paul Warne's first game in charge of Derby County is at Cambridge United. Carl Robinson's Oxford United travel to Charlton Athletic. Barnsley in fifth, they go to Fleetwood Town. Ipswich second, first defeat of the season last weekend. Play third place, Portsmouth, still unbeaten. Fourth place, Sheffield Wednesday are at Port Vale, and the leaders, Plymouth, are at Wickham. Two jobs outstanding in Skybet League 2, Phil. I wondered whether you had any interest in either of them. It might be difficult for you to apply for the Colchester United one with your Southend United affiliation. And I wondered whether the Hartlepool United one with your also affiliation, but as a long-serving player there and club captain and electrician and everything else you did for the club might have. Have you put your CV in for those two jobs, Philip?
Clem, you know as well as I do, I've been involved in the game for 43 years, so I've got an affiliation with probably half of the league at the moment. I haven't applied for them, Clem, and it's one of them where I'm not sitting back and thinking I'm a big timer waiting for something to come my way. I've pledged a loyalty to IMG over in India for to do some media work with them for the start of the ISL season, which is next week. So I'm going to go across to India probably until January. I come back in the January, or if I do a good job, they'll keep me there, which is whichever the case may be. But I've pledged myself to my former team. Actually, I'm going to follow them. Hyderabad, they won the title last year and did ever so well. This was the year before Owen Coyle won it with Jamshedpur last year, obviously. So it's a good stepping stone for one or two English coaches. And I've noticed Simon Grayson's gone over there. Yeah. He's managing Bengaluru. And Eddie Boothroyd's gone as well, and he's at Jamshedpur. So I'm going across there with a vested interest in English coaching because I think we've got a chance of making a name for ourselves in an emerging market.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. I was a little bit surprised Simon Grayson took that job. I don't think he'd taken a management job outside of the north of England, had he? And I kept teasing him saying, why don't you apply for some jobs down south? And then the next thing, I didn't mean as south as that, for goodness sake. Your fixtures in Skybet League 2 this coming weekend. Saturday, early kickoff, Yorkshire Derby, as Bradford, currently seventh, travel to Harrogate. Stevenage in third, up against Steve Evans, one of Steve Evans' former clubs, Crawley Town. The brilliant leaders, Leighton Orient, 9 league wins in 10. They entertain Newport County. Fifth place, Salford, at home to Grimsby Town. Northampton in second, they travel to Swindon Town, and Barrow in fourth go to Tranmere. I should tell you as well that there is a Friday night game, and that is sixth place, Mansfield, entertaining bottom club and managerless Hartlepool United. Does the fact that you do now have an 8-month-old baby, does that change your perspective on a potential return to the murky world of management, Phil?
Yes, it means I've got to work for the next 20 years of my life.
No further answer necessary.
I think, it does. It has changed my perspective. And I must admit, I've got to say this. I think the recent death of the monarchy, you know, the Queen, it sort of sat me down, Clem, you know. It sort of slowed me down, stopped me and said, what are you going to do differently? You know, what are you going to do for the next 20, hopefully 30 years of your life? And I wanted to be involved in football, but I want to do something different, you know. I want to smash it in a way, not just management, you know, maybe something a little bit with a different angle, but involved in the game still, you know. And I'm still toying with the idea of what to do next, you know. We can all just apply for jobs and take the next managerial role and become one of a number again. And I just want to make a difference between now and what I would class as retirement. And retirement's when Monty's 20, so it's another 20 years, I'm afraid.
May your infectious spirit never diminish, Phil. Thanks for joining us. It's been a blast.
Appreciate that, Clem. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Phil Brown and Paul Warne. Weren't they both absolutely brilliant? If you've enjoyed listening, do please give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.